Bill's Famous Cheese Spread Studio 1A. This evening, the Blockout Sports Pod is back on the air. From behind a different master control desk tonight, I am your host and moderator for this evening. My name is Travis Carter. I am currently here in my music studio recording the episode tonight. The downstairs pub studio is currently not able to be utilized as it is undergoing some reconstruction and renovations at the current moment due to the flood we had a few months ago. So I am here in my smaller studio tonight flying this ship solo. Hope to have the fabulous one call in here in a little bit. He has had a very busy week, which I'm sure he will relay to us if he is able to give us a call. I would like to get his thoughts on the Indianapolis 500, his first trip back to the Speedway in close to 40 years, as we attended the 109th running of the race together this past Sunday. Just quickly, if you're listening to this and you are interested in the race, then you know how it turned out. Alex Palou continues his, really in the modern era, which I would say the last 40 years, is unprecedented, and really his start to this 2025 season has only been matched really by AJ Foyt, who did something similar to what Palou has done back in the 60s. It was a strange race. Scott McLaughlin for Team Penske, the best starting of the Penske cars, the only one that wasn't penalized and had to start at the rear of the field, crashed on the pace lap as he was trying to warm his tires on a cold track and, you know, just hit the gas. And as he was turning the wheel, and unfortunately the car snapped on him and he went into the inside retaining wall, slid up into turn one, close to where we were seated. So his day ended before the race even began. And then on the first green flag lap, Marco Andretti suffered the same fate, although this time he had a slow spin into the outside of the turn one fence. And his race was over basically as it began. It was an interesting day. It was different. It was the coldest 500 that I have personally attended. I believe on the all-time list, it was in the top three for the coldest starting race temperature. Was in the low 60s. It was delayed by some 35 minutes or so because of precipitation on the track. It was, at least at the beginning, it was breezy, and that made it feel even cooler. It was overcast. So it was a different kind of race, and hopefully we will get Freddie's thoughts upon attending it. One last piece of information for those who don't follow it closely but might have watched the race and then kind of checked out. The second place finisher, Marcus Ericsson, who is going for his second 500-mile race win, thankfully, in retrospect, did not win the race because he was penalized After the race, his car failed inspection. So that moved him back to 31st. Kyle Kirkwood, another Andretti driver, also failed post-race inspection, was moved to 32nd, and Prima Racing's Callum Ilott also failed post-race inspection and was placed 33rd. That means that David Malukas for AJ Foyt Racing finished 2nd. Santino Ferrucci for AJ Foyt Racing finished 5th. So two top fives for the legend AJ Foyt, which is always great to see. But boy, we could have had a real mess on our hands had Marcus Ericsson won the race on the track and then failed inspection coming on the heels of the Penske post or pre-qualifying failure of Tech before the Fast 12, which we touched upon last week. So all in all, not an unexpected result for Alex Palou to win the race. Some folks might say it was not, especially the last 10 to 15 laps, was not as exciting as maybe we had hoped. Once Palou got around Ericsson, there was not much question to the fact that he was going to hang on and win. A lot of that, I think, has to do with the hybrid system that the IndyCar series is running, and they haven't really, this is the first time at the 500 that they have run these. They haven't really figured out exactly how the cars are going to handle, how to make for the best racing. I'm sure that is going to be a point of contention moving forward, especially as IndyCar moves to a new car for the 2026 season. Also on Sunday night, we had the what they call Racers and Pacers, the Indiana Pacers. We're looking to go ahead 3-0 in the Eastern Conference Finals. Unfortunately, that did not happen. The Knicks came storming back, much as the Pacers have several times in this playoff run, from a 20-point deficit and beat Indiana at home. However, Indiana bounces back immediately behind a legendary performance from Tyrese Halliburton on Tuesday night to take a 3-1 lead. As we record this episode this evening, the Pacers and Knicks are playing in Madison Square Garden in Game 5. I believe the Knicks were up by 11 at halftime, which, honestly, if you've watched these Pacers, could be about right where they want them. So we will be looking in on that as the evening progresses. I'm going to take a quick break here, and we're going to see if we can get Freddie Benders on the line here shortly. If we can, we will be back with a recap of our trip. We've got the actual race out of the way. We'll get a recap of our trip and some of his thoughts on the way that that we do the 500. And I think he had a fantastic time. If you know Freddie, he has a good time most anywhere. If we are unable to get him, I will come back to wrap up this rather abbreviated show. I always like to get at least an episode out so that you know that we are still here, and we plan on being here for the distant foreseeable future. So with that, I am going to take a quick break, and I apologize for the abrupt ending there. I'm not sure exactly what happened. That was probably operator error of some description. But as I was alluding to, we have jumped in our time machine. It is now Friday morning, and I am now joined by the fabulous one, Freddie Benders, here to talk about. Like I said, I really want to get your thoughts, Fred. First of all, thanks for calling in.
Oh, yeah, love calling in.
And secondly, we'll just jump right in. You had an opportunity. We got to go to the Indianapolis 500. I talked about it in the preamble here before you came on. Got into the kind of the nuts and bolts of how what a kind of a strange race it was. But I wanted to get your thoughts on your first trip back to the Speedway in some 39 or 40 years. What did you think of the spectacle and the way that the day unfolded?
Well, it all starts with all your buddies. Shout out to all the guys. I'll just call them the guys that did it the best way I've ever seen it. As you party before and after a big race like that, they know who they are. And wow, I mean, ribeyes and shrimp for brunch before the Indy 500. I mean, what else can you ask for? But man, I'm telling you, when we got ready to get in there, and like you said, we don't get there till 11, and you're thinking, man, I used to get there when I was a little kid at like 5 a.m. with my dad, and we literally parked, saw the coolest Indy bathroom I've ever seen, parked in the parking lot, and next thing you know, we're literally walking right in there. And it was the entrance and all that was kind of a little bit of the same, but 356,000 people just blew me away. I forgot that it was that big. And man, you are tight in those seats. So I highly recommend next time I will not bring such a packed cooler, but buddy, that's what makes it so fun. You're jam-packed in there with all these crazy race fans, and you're just waiting for all the camaraderie at the beginning of the race is like the coolest thing in the world. Like, I mean, I love the race and keeping up with the cars and watching who's going to wreck or who's, you know, on the same lead lap and all that. But the beginning of the race just brought me back where they do taps. You can hear a pin drop. The flyby is easily the greatest flyby I've ever seen. And I've been to many sporting events, Travis. That was easily the coolest. Then to celebrate the Army, the 250 years of Army, the Apache helicopters that flew right over our heads. And then they follow the pace car and the lap cars. That was just unbelievable. So before the race even starts, it's like you go through all these things, the national anthem, America the Beautiful, home in Indiana. Is that right, home in Indiana?
Back home again in Indiana, yes.
Back home and dude, it's just like one thing after another, and just the energy is booming from everybody. And then that first lap came around, and well, it was probably not what we were expecting to have a wreck on there. But you know, it was so interesting that I learned that there hasn't been that many cold or chilly Indy 500s. Am I right about that?
Yeah, this was, I talked about it and before you came on last night. This was in the top five coldest green flag temperatures in race history, and it's been going on for, well, this was the 109th running, so you were there at one of the, I think it might have been second or third.
That is just phenomenal to me to know that how many derbies that I've been to, Kentucky derbies, and they've been freezing cold, way colder than that. They've been burning hot, you know, temperatures in the hundreds. And to know that that up there, that it's normally super hot, it really, really surprised me. And to know also that those tires, you know, I know race gearheads and race fans know that if your tires aren't hot, they're not going to stick on the track. But to find out just how hard and how bad it was at the beginning.
Right.
Not to mention the track, I'm sure, was a little damp on top of that. But to know that they were having wrecks literally going 100 miles an hour following the pace car because of the cold temperatures.
Yeah, that's kind of the contradiction there, is that the cooler the track, the better the conditions are for the cars. But for that to become true, the tires have to get warm first. Cold tires on a cold track is a bad combination. Hot tires, or tires that are up to temperature on a cool track, is optimal. So they were trying to get to the optimal state, and Scott McLaughlin, unfortunately, just made a mistake and jerked the wheel and pressed the pedal at the wrong time, and the car snapped on him. The next thing you know, he was into the wall.
Right, and then there were a couple mistakes and things like that, but all in all, it was a great race. The winner, you know, I mean, what do you say about him? That guy has just been dominating the year so far, and he kind of hung back there like a cool customer, Palou, and then when his time came, he took it.
By the way, man,
what a great race.
I'll give you a shout out for pronouncing Alex Palou's name that way, because that's probably exactly how AJ pronounces it. That Palou out there, he's pretty fast.
And kudos for AJ Racing. They had a good day as well.
Yeah, it ended up being better than what we thought, because the second place car and the fifth place car both got moved to the back of the pack. So AJ, instead of finishing third and sixth, ended up finishing second and fifth.
Right. My guy, and before the day was over, I ended up pulling for this 23-year-old that was with AJ's team. I was like, man, 23 years old and you're out there doing this. That just blew me away.
Yeah, that's David Malukas from Chicago, who in fact finished second.
Yeah, that how impressive that is to know that there's 23-year-olds out there doing this. It is just phenomenal.
Yeah, and I believe, and I would have to go back and check this, but I believe there was a 20-year-old in the field, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, wow.
I would have to go back and double-check that, but I think that that's correct. But, yeah, I mean, it's crazy. If you think about what knuckleheads we were at 20 and 23, and these guys are out there in the Indianapolis 500.
Yeah, and where the pressure is like, you better not wreck me, kid. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's immense pressure. I feel like there's so much pressure on people to not only screw up everything that their team and their sponsors and all this work that's been done, but they don't want to screw some other driver either.
Right.
And the pressure of that is just insane to me.
Yeah. And the other thing is, and I mean, not to discount any form of motor racing where the speeds are that high is obviously a dangerous endeavor. But I mean, by that same token, IndyCar and all forms of motorsport are infinitely more safe than they were, you know, let's say even 25, 30, especially 40 years ago. But when you are in an open wheel car, and there's a difference between touching wheels at Indianapolis in an open wheel car and touching wheels at Indianapolis in a stock car. You know, if that happens in a NASCAR race, a guy can bang into the wall, bounce off of it, and keep going. That
Revan's racing, Daddy.
Yeah, that is not the case with Indianapolis 500 cars, obviously. So the precision is a totally different animal, and yes, the pressure to not tear up your race car or somebody else's, or potentially injure yourself or somebody else, is a whole different ball game.
Well, what a race. I got to drop some of my dad's ashes out there from 40 years ago, which was awesome.
Yeah, super cool.
It was really cool to not having been there 40 years and then going with all the guys. And a lot of guys that we went with have so much history of the place, and not including yourself, as we all know. But
Eric, my personal history is nothing compared. Eric and Ryan have been to, I believe, every race since 1986, and their father Greg, who, by the way,
yes, the master
Fred. It's almost like getting to go to the 500 with like a tour guide to a certain extent. Because Greg Pittner, the guy who, has, I believe next year will be his 55th consecutive 500-mile race. He was friends with J.C. Agajanian, one of the legendary car owners, Parnelli Jones, one of the all-time drivers in the history of Indianapolis, amongst other people. He's just been around the Speedway so much. That's a really unique thing that we get to do, is to kind of have that link to history by going with someone like that. And I'm glad you got to experience that, because that's real cool.
His grandchildren know just as much about it as anybody else, too.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I mean, that was phenomenal going with so many guys that are just ate up with it. I love it. It was great. It's a bucket list, and hopefully I'll be lucky enough to go again sometime. And dude, I you never know. Every race is going to be different. You never know if it's going to be burning hot or what the weather's going to be like, but you can always count on the camaraderie close to 4 hours of nonstop action.
Yep, that's very well said. And I will end it with this. Speaking of, you never know what the temperature is going to be. I would take what we set in last Sunday 100 times over the one time I had to sit out there when it was 98 degrees at Green Flag.
Yeah, I can imagine up there with everybody touching legs and arms and shoulders.
Oh, yeah, it was, it was still fun, but looking back on that particular day, that was one that I probably could have done without.
Right.
But, so that'll put a bow on the 500 until next season. For those of you who are interested in IndyCar racing, they are racing this weekend in Detroit, in downtown Detroit, which is obviously a completely different type of automobile race. Lower speeds, much more, many more turns, literally on the streets of a major American city. So if you kind of got your interest piqued by watching the 500, maybe try to check out some of the action from Detroit this weekend. Staying on a Indianapolis bent for just a second, as I mentioned last night when I recorded the first part of this episode, the Pacers and Knicks were in Game 5 of their Eastern Conference Finals. It was halftime when I left that. It never really got any closer than what it was at halftime. I think the lead stayed between 12 to 16.
Very surprisingly, too. I thought, oh, no, here, one, these two teams, somebody's coming back for sure, you know?
Yeah.
That's just how it's been.
This was the game, I think, and I think everybody that watches NBA playoff basketball for as long as we have, you kind of get a sense of how these series have ebbs and flows. And the other night after the 500, if you remember, we were sitting all out on Eric's deck, and everybody was giving their predictions for the game. And, I mean, because we're all Pacers fans, everybody said, well, the Pacers buy this, the Pacers buy that, the Pacers buy this. And they came to me, and I said, oh, tonight the Knicks are going to win by 6. And it just so happened that the Knicks won by 6. And then for game 4, we were doing the same thing. And I actually was texting back and forth with Colin. And he said, what do you think about the game tonight? And I said, oh, I think the Pacers win by 11 tonight. Well, the Pacers won by 9. Last night, I did pick the Pacers to win because I thought that they might. I knew the first half was going to be a struggle. I knew that it would probably be an 8 to 10 point lead, was what I thought for the Knicks at halftime. But then I thought that the Pacers would settle in, the attrition would start happening, and I at least thought that the Pacers would make it close. But they just, you know, Tyrese Halliburton, for all that we love about him as Pacers fans and everything, he has a tendency, after a great game, especially when they go back on the road sometimes, he just isn't aggressive from the get-go. He becomes way too... I mean, part of his strength, don't get me wrong, is the way that he looks, as he's a pass-first point guard, but he's also usually very aggressive offensively when he's at his best, and he's shooting, he's driving to the rim, he's getting fouled. But, man, when he decides that he's not going to be aggressive offensively, he's not, and the Pacers kind of go as he goes. And last night was one of those games, and it never... I think the Pacers had cut it to 12 or 10 maybe at one point, and you thought, well, this is where they might be able to make a move. Immediately, the Knicks go back up, you know, 16 or whatever, and it was never really a ball game. With that being
said, I think the Knicks played great defense last night and did a couple things they haven't done.
Well, the other thing, defensively last night, the Pacers were a complete mess. They were totally disorganized at least twice. And it might have happened more than twice. But at least twice, two guys were playing man and three guys were playing zone.
Right. And, yeah, it was a little off-kilter for sure.
That is not a way to win a playoff game.
I almost feel like that this series has always been destined for a game 7. But let's hope that that doesn't. They're at 6, right? They're at 6. So
game 6 is back at Gamebridge. You saw the best the Knicks had to offer last night. You saw You saw the worst the Pacers had to offer last night.
I'd see the Pacers ready to end this thing.
Before the series started on this podcast, I picked the Pacers in 6. And I'm even more confident now than I was before. Just the way these playoff series go, I think the Pacers play their best game of the series coming up on Saturday night, and I think this series ends in 6 games.
Right.
Now, I'm not going to be 1,000% shocked if it goes the other way, but I would put, if I had to, you know, life depended on it, who's going to win game 6, without hesitation, I would say that I believe that Indiana will win.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure.
Now, the Western Conference playoffs, we talked about it really at the, you know, at the beginning. You were adamant at the beginning that Oklahoma City would be in the finals. They really have not really haven't been tested yet, have they?
No, they haven't. I'm gonna tell you this: when the Thunder's up on you, it's gonna be interesting to see if the Pacers win. And I know the Pacers and the Knicks are both these great comeback teams, but the Pacers even better than the Knicks, in my opinion, as of late. But when you're the Thunder and you're up on somebody, I don't see anybody in the world coming back on them.
No, they are not a team that you can get behind by 20 points. They're not that team.
Their defense is different. SGA is different. I look at that kid, and I knew when he was at UK that he was a great player. He was my favorite player immediately. And he didn't even show everything that he had. Now he's somehow, I mean, what I learned the last game and saw his numbers, which were insane, what, 40, like a triple-double with 40. I'm going to tell you right now, Kyrie Irving is a great point guard, and I know everyone talks about his handles and everything, but I'm going to tell you right now, I think Kyrie Irving just got passed up. I think SGA is the best ball handler in the NBA. And if you gonna argue with me, tell me when someone's ever gonna take the ball from him.
Right.
And dude, I'm talking about dribbling it to where he makes it, he's like right in your face and in the paint dribbling. Kyrie does his stuff at the top of the key and around the 3-point line. SGA does it amongst the big guys in the paint with the floaters and all these little moves. And he just, God, I'm trying to think of who he kind of reminds me of from the old days, because he's kind of a throwback player. But, man, I think he is the number one ball handler in the NBA. He's obviously the MVP. You just can't get the ball from him, and he gets his shot off every time.
Right.
Holmgren and all the role players that are great around him are playing fantastic. Dort, some of these guys coming off the bench. They are just a relentless defensive crew with height and length and long players. And I just this next series, and I think it will be the Pacers with them. They're going to have to stay in this game.
Oh, like, yeah.
It's going to. Yep. And I think they will. I think that it will be these games are going to be good coming forward. I think the Pacers is a good matchup for them with some of the big bodies that they have, Turner and all those guys.
I also think that from a Minnesota standpoint, their coach didn't necessarily, as they say in soccer, did not necessarily cover himself in glory in this particular series. I felt like Minnesota had the way that they were going to play, and that's just how they played. And it was either going to work or it didn't. And, like, Anthony Edwards not being able to get his shots or his normal type of offensive play, I feel like Rick Carlisle, when that happens in a game, like, that's what I think. That's why another reason I have supreme confidence in the Pacers is Carlisle is so good at looking at what the Knicks did last night, and Carlisle and his staff going, okay, well, if they try to play us that way again, this is how we're going to beat that. And I'm not saying that Minnesota didn't make any adjustments or whatever, but schematically, I just think they had an idea. This is how we've got to play. And if it works, it works, and if it doesn't, it doesn't. And as you said, there were, I don't know, at least three of the games were completely out of hand by halftime.
Right. No, I'm going to tell you right now, I think that the role players for the Pacers are playing better than the role players of the Thunder. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. They probably lean on them a little bit more than Oklahoma City does. And I don't want to get ahead of ourselves because we could be sitting here on the podcast next week.
I don't want to put that in a heck situation, right. But I've been trying to just compare the actual players.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Just as I'm watching all four teams, I'm trying to look at that comparison.
No, I think, look, whoever comes out of the East is going to face pretty long odds and a difficult road against Oklahoma
exactly.
City. I mean, I think,
exactly.
I don't know that there's even the most diehard Pacer or Knicks fan in the world. I mean, there are some irrational people that are always think, well, we can beat anybody. But I think almost anybody with any basketball knowledge or that follows the NBA would say, if you play this series on paper, Oklahoma City is the better team. I don't think there's any doubt. But I do think from a matchup standpoint, I think that the Pacers at least can match up with them to an extent that the series will be very competitive. I will not say that I believe that the Pacers can win in a 7-game series, but I believe, like, I certainly don't think it will be like the Minnesota series where three of the games are like 40-point blowouts. You know what I mean?
Right. Yes. Yes.
That's where I'm willing to go with that. But as I said, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. Pacers still have an enormous game on Saturday night to clinch their first spot in the NBA Finals since the year 2000.
Let's get it on. Let's get it on. I've been watching the hockey, too.
Yeah.
Sorry, Tuna. But Freddie called the Panthers in four, and they almost got it.
Yeah, they closed out in five last night, right?
Yeah, in five. I think Tuna was calling Capitals all day long on that one. I could be wrong. But I think that's going to be another hell of a matchup. I mean, you got the best hockey player in the world going against maybe the best team in the world.
Right.
So that's going to be another great matchup. I'm looking forward to hockey.
The Stanley Cup starts next Wednesday.
Right. Next Wednesday, I'm ready for that.
I'm ready for the
World Series.
With a real opportunity for a Canadian team to finally win another Stanley Cup, which we've talked about. It's been a long time.
And I know Tuna started the chanting of, we don't want no stinking Canadians to win.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. And right, Edmonton was in the finals last year, correct?
I honestly don't know.
I was getting the feeling that the Watson's name.
Well,
know,
no, the, no, the, no, because Florida's been in it for this will be their third straight. And I don't think
straight. Okay.
And I don't think this is a rematch from last year. I am
okay,
not. Obviously, I am not Mr. Hockey, and we'll have Tuna here to fill us all in on that next week as the Stanley Cup gets rolling, as well as he is also a resident college baseball guy. And as you were just saying, the playoffs are getting started maybe today, certainly this weekend. Of local note, Kentucky and Louisville are both in the tournament. Louisville is playing in Nashville. Kentucky is playing, where did we say? Are they in Clemson, maybe?
I think so. I'm not sure. I don't know where they're playing. I can't remember, but I do know that they made it. So that's saying something right there.
Tuna had sent us a thing yesterday where he had told us, let's see. Cards are the 2 seed in the Vandy region. UK is at Clemson. Yes, UK is at Clemson. So that'll be rolling on. Of course, we've got the big game 6 Saturday. I'm not even going to talk about potential game 7 because we don't want it to go to game 7. So let's hope the Pacers can close this thing out in 6 and we can gear up for a great NBA Finals. Fred, I'm going to open the floor to you here at the end. If you have anything that you wanted to add on this relatively short episode that we are going to put out this afternoon.
Well, don't forget, we got a great race coming up on Saturday. If I'm not mistaken, it's been a whirlwind of a week for me. My wife's been out of town, so I'm summer's out, and I'm got sleepovers with kids and trying to make club soccer tryouts and this, that, and the other, and baseball games. But I think the Metropolitan Mile is this weekend, which is a big race at Saratoga. And the reason I mention that race is, obviously, this is older horses, but legendary horses, horses that have won Horse of the Year. And they are going against each other on Saturday. And that would be... That would be tomorrow.
That would be tomorrow.
That would be tomorrow, Fred. Good job. But that is the Met Mile. Check it out. Fierceness, the Horse of the Year, is going against White Abario. They have not met, and it is getting ready to be a major. Whoever wins this could get, besides journalism or sovereignty or something like that, could are on the top list to get Horse of the Year. So it's going to be one hell of a battle. I'm sure there's some other great horses in there. I haven't seen the field yet, but I do know that two horses that have won, three in a row, and they're now getting ready to bang heads here at the Met Mile. And then don't forget, next week we'll be talking about a 6-horse field in the Belmont, but a good 6-horse field. So you're talking about sovereignty is back, journalism, Beza, Rodriguez. You're talking about some really good horses that we'll be talking about next week at the Belmont as well. So
here's
horse racing does not stop. Matter of fact, Mystic Dan's at Churchill tomorrow, and he, the past Derby winner, is back at Churchill. He'll be running tomorrow.
Awesome. Just for information's sake, here is the field in the Met Mile. Fierceness, White Abario, Raging Torrent, Just a Touch, Mind Frame. I remember Mind Frame.
Oh, dude, he just won on Derby Day in a big race. That's where I won a lot of money, middle of the day, Derby Day. So, yes, I may go with him for value, but it's going to be tough.
Yeah, he won the Grade 1 Churchill Downs Stakes on Derby Day.
Right.
You have Mulliken, who was 5th in that same race. Bishop's Bay, Banishing, who finished 2nd in the Churchill Downs Stakes.
Right.
Judge Miller. And Quince Brew.
Well, that's Tuna's horse.
That's right. All right, Fred, do you have anything else to add?
That is it, buddy. I mean, that's kind of what we got coming up besides baseball. And let's get it. Go Pacers. I'm probably gonna check out that Indy race a little bit too. I'm geared up now, buddy.
Awesome. Yeah, and hopefully we will be back next week. Whether we can do it in the downstairs pub or not remains to be seen. There's a lot of work that's being done down there and work to still be done, but we will figure out a way, hopefully, to get everyone in a studio, whether it be that one or Studio 1A, as I am in right now. But again, we thank everybody for listening. I know this has been kind of an odd episode just because of circumstances, but want to thank Fred for calling in, and hope Tuna will be back.
We don't
back.
Ever give up, Travis.
That's
do we?
Right.
We don't. Bob Alvano.
That's
don't
right.
Give up. Don't ever give up.
That's right. We will be here in one form or another. But until next week, for the fabulous one, Freddie Benders, this is Travis Carter saying so long, everybody.